very warm welcome to all our listeners. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you will enjoy this podcast. Hi Lee, thank you so much for joining us on Blitz Business. It's good to have you.
Hey Ashish, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Awesome. Let's get started. So Lee, first tell us a little bit about yourself and then we dive deeper into it.
Awesome. So my name is Lee Keshav. I'm originally from New Delhi. I'm presently the design head of a startup, and I'm also a race car driver. And these are two very different things. So I've been working on both of them for a long time and still trying to make my way to the top, to Formula One. So that's me in a nutshell.
Awesome. So that's a very fascinating field, you know. So I had individuals from all spectrum. This is a new area I think we'll discover today. So tell us a little bit. So how did you first, like, so was it your passion? Like, how did you really get started? You know, what's like step 1, 2, 3? And as you mentioned, right, it's the F and the ultimate. So what's the journey like been for you till now?
Great question. I grew up in the 90s, and the biggest source of entertainment was television. So just like any other kid after school or after you're doing your homework, you just watch some TV, and on TV I just happened to watch car racing, more specifically Formula One, and I got really fascinated with what it was. I always had a feeling for, you know, speed. Like when I used to ride my bike as a kid, I would really enjoy going fast. And so it's something that I picked up very young in my age. I'm guessing that could be instinctive. But beyond that, I had no idea what racing is. I was not around anyone, either family or friends, who had any clue what it is. So it was purely a fascination of watching racing on TV. And as things moved on further and I was in my early teens, internet became a very useful tool for me, which has actually decided my journey so far, as I picked up both my design path and my racing path from literally Google. I just searched for how do you become a racing driver, and whatever I could find, I started learning. And there was this realization that this can actually happen. Like, why can't it not happen? So it was more of a, what's the real reason why I'm not pursuing this? And apart from the fact that I didn't know anything, there was not really another reason for me at that point. And you know, when you're a kid, like, everything seems possible and nothing is impossible. So I guess that worked out as well. And yeah, I just started searching for training academies and stuff. And that's how I got my first break.
Awesome. So it's basically, you know, so what is that journey? So for example, the reason is like cricket, like everyone knows, you know, you play for, I don't know, the first break comes in at Ranji level, national level, blah, blah, blah. Then you enter into the main team, you know. So everyone is very well aware of this entire process, you know. Everyone follows cricket, right? So for you, and for our listeners, what is that process? You enroll in an academy, then are there levels, et cetera, if you can share some, you know, details, if for any other racer who wants to be, you know, it's possible.
Absolutely. So very similar to like any other sport, like you mentioned, cricket. You have your, first you got to learn. There's always some kind of an academy. Now in cricket, of course, you can kind of learn on your own as well. You can go to the field with your friends and practice. Racing is unfortunately a bit more difficult because you have to go to a racetrack and do it at a racetrack. A lot of people start with go-karting. That's the foundation level of racing. And, you know, it could be something just going to one of these go-karting locations and just driving there and understanding how you feel. Of course, you're a kid at this point, so parents have a huge impact and, you know, influence on your journey. So let's say your parents and you both have passion for something. Go-karting is actually the best way to start. Build your skills. And from that, you go into like racing schools, which kind of teach you the fundamentals of driving, safety, racecraft, fitness, all of those things. And we have some in India as well. And once you've done that, then you enter kind of like the national championship. And that's where you get to race for the first time. So that would be your first actual competition race. And then you have to build your journey upwards. So you do your national, mm-hmm. then you do maybe like your continental kind of thing, which is, let's say, Asian championship or
mm-hmm.
Eastern championship. Then you can end up in, let's say, the international championships, which happen in Europe and all around the world. And you build up from, let's say, Formula 4, Formula 3, Formula 2, and then eventually Formula 1. And Formula
mm-hmm.
1 would be when you make it to the World Cup as part of the Indian cricket team.
So all of this sounds very expensive, right? So how does someone enter and support this sort of, you know, sport?
It is definitely very expensive. I didn't even know this when I was a kid, honestly. Otherwise, I would have not even started. Maybe that's a good thing. Racing inherently is very expensive, unfortunately. Essentially, as I mentioned, you need a racetrack, you need a race car, you need all the safety equipment, you need the driving coach, you need engineers, mechanics. So it just becomes like very expensive to even go practice. Hence, I mentioned that a lot of kids practice when it's go-karting because that's relatively so much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of your core skills and your racecraft can be built in karting.
Mm-hmm.
Before you go start racing bigger cars, because then it becomes really expensive, so you don't drive as much. Your driving actually starts reducing as you go further in your career, because it gets more and more and more expensive and restrictive. Because what they don't want is one individual super rich kid coming in and having an advantage
mm-hmm.
by spending way more than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, they have a lot of restrictions now on how much practice you can do. So by the time you get to Formula 3, Formula 2, you can't just go and practice there whenever you want. It all comes under strict, you know, regulations, making sure that you don't gain unfair advantage wherever you can just by spending more. So that's good to see. But yes, relatively, I would say it's one of the most expensive sports, or you could even say passions, that people have. It's really expensive. Yes.
And I also, just to clarify, so basically there is a regulation in place to make sure someone cannot practice more?
Yes, there are multiple regulations like this. For example,
wow.
let's say if you are having a race in India,
hmm.
They would build some kind of a cool down, you know, window where I can't just show up a day before and practice online. This way,
okay.
Anyone who's got like excess money can't just show up and start practicing before the others can. And this just ensures more fair racing for kids who can't just afford to go drive wherever they want. However, this is only at the top level.
Okay.
At Formula One level, you know, you barely can practice without it being an official event.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the goal is that, you know, others won't overspend compared to you. But of course, at a junior level, you can practice as much as you want.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. But an interesting regulation, you know. Who would have thought, you know? The saying is practice makes perfect, you know. Hey, but hey, you gotta...
Well, if you're a billionaire kid, then yes, it works for you.
That's nice. And how young, or, you know, what was your first... how old were you when you first got, like, your proper hands on a car and driving on a track, like... How young were you?
I was actually quite old. I was probably 14, 15 when I first, like, you know, took part in any training.
Okay.
Usually kids start very early, like 6, 7. They would be driving go-karts. By the time they reach 10, 11, they're already very fast in go-karts. And by the time they reach 13, 14, again, they are, you know, stepping into the cars. So I was already late because I was probably 16 when I got into a race car. But I always approached it as a more technical and entrepreneurial kind of journey. So it kind of worked out for me, because even though I didn't have that practice from younger times, I did have more, obviously, maturity at that point to be able to understand and learn. So ideal age to get into racing, I would say, would be somewhere 13, 14. Not too young, not too old. But there are instances where people have come in at 18, 19, even 20, and then made it all the way to Formula One.
And what is the ecosystem like in India for such kind of sports? Did you find a lot of support system, or it's very limited? Like, what was that sort of experience in terms of, coaching, training, the ecosystem itself?
Overall, very positive. When I started, there was less, and over the years, I've seen there's a lot more infra available to upcoming Indian racing drivers. We have a bunch of racetracks. So we have this racetrack in Noida called the Budh International Circuit, and that's a world-class facility. So in terms of infrastructure, we have something like that. We have a racetrack in Chennai and a couple of more around the country. And we also have some really good coaching and racing schools now available in India, because a lot of racers who have learned and raced themselves have gone ahead and opened their own racing schools. So I would say today India has one of the best grassroots level coaching and racing opportunities, because it's actually one of the cheapest in the world to get started.
And I think there is some event happening, or maybe it happened, I don't know. Not tracking, but I think some MotoGP stuff happening in
Oh, it
Noida.
just happened a couple
It
of weeks
happened.
ago.
Ah, okay. So does bikes also interest you, or cars is more interesting?
Everything related to speed. So I love bikes as well. And I actually got started with bikes when I first started. But my mom was like, no chance.
No
And
safety issue or something.
safety. And I'm an entrepreneur as well. And when we get to that topic of how this journey worked out for both the things I do, I also realize that if I'm racing a bike and if I fall and break a bone, I'm out of work. So it was something that even in my mind, I realized that okay, I need to make sure that I'm as safe and fit as possible so I can function every day. Because as much as I love the bikes, I knew like I'm gonna fall a bunch of times and break some bones. So naturally, I guess I stepped back from that and went more into car racing, and it worked out pretty well.
Let's talk about your the entrepreneurship. So apart from racing, what keeps you occupied?
So I have a full-time job, like most of us. I am a design head in a tech startup in India. This is again has been a long journey for me. Just like racing, I was a very creative kid growing up, but I wouldn't say I was an artist. I was just creative. What I created wasn't the best, but I realized very early I couldn't do like proper art, but I loved making shapes and stuff. And naturally, when the era of websites started, that dot-com boom and everyone having a website, every service having a website, I like took it to like a fish to water. Like I felt so natural, and I loved the fact that as a 12, 13-year-old kid, I could create something and put it out there, because I couldn't create something in the physical world. I was too young to make a product or service, but on the digital world, I could. So I created my own website, then I started looking for freelance work. All of it just happened naturally, as a natural desire to find work. And I think we Indians are really good at that. We are always looking for good opportunities to level up in life. And even though I didn't know what I can do on the internet, I just had this understanding that I can make money on it. So I started, looking for freelance work, and I started designing websites. Then eventually the mobile era came, so I started designing mobile apps. And I was still very young, I was still under 18. So I remember I had to like ask my mom to set up a company so that I could start charging the clients, because I didn't even have my own banking. So started very early, and till this day, that's been my main source of income, you could say, and my main source of career growth. And so my weekdays are essentially product design and working on some really, really cool projects. So in 2011, 12, I met the founder of Hike. And there was no Hike back then. We were just starting Hike. And it's the first time I actually met, let's say, a client in person. And I think 17 or 18 years old, and he made me an offer. He said, "You want to join us like full time?" And I wasn't ready for it. I was comfortable freelancing from home, working with clients all over the world. But again, I had this feeling that maybe this could be a life-changing opportunity. So I said yes to it, and I ended up in the office. And I have no professional experience of working around other professions. I've only worked alone. So it was a huge learning curve. I got surrounded by the smartest people I've ever met. And it really changed the trajectory of my career.
So I can imagine, I think their office was in Gurgaon or something? Or...
We started off in Vasant Kunj. And Vasant then Kunj. Our first office was in Gurgaon, yes. And we spent a few years there.
So I have an interesting question. How was the travel from Delhi to Gurgaon?
Oh, man. I discovered a lot in life. And yes. I was like, why do people do this every day? I was so confused. Oh, man. The roads were not as nice. There was used to be a toll, a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
So I would say it used to take the same amount of time because I think there was less traffic back then. This is you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was definitely less traffic. In fact, I even remember some days where I would leave the office at 6, 7 p.m. and it would still be like normal traffic, nothing crazy. Very strange memories of going out in peak hours and reaching home on time.
Gurgaon stories are always amazing. Oh, yeah. I once visiting for a client meeting in Gurgaon. It was back in the day, you know, and while coming back to Delhi, and then it took me 4 hours. And from that day, I made a promise, you know, enter Gurgaon by 12 and leave by 4 or 5 max, you know.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's another thing I learned, and I'm like, man, I can't do this stuff. Like, I can't commute. So either I work off peak hours, or I work remotely. But just being stuck in traffic is so inefficient.
And especially for you, you like speed. It's totally opposite of speed, you know.
I know.
It is. It's slowest you can go, you know. So I can imagine.
Now we are remote, so I'm really happy.
Yeah, that is also the other aspect, you know, after the pandemic, you know, many companies have went remote and people are not, you know, companies are okay, but some are not okay. So, you know, so what do you, let's talk about a little bit about that, you know, being remote and working, you know, as an individual, do you prefer or you prefer being office? Imagine office is not in Gurgaon.
Office could be anywhere. I have personally never enjoyed going to an office, and that's purely because I am self-taught. I freelanced from a very young age. So I already built, I guess, my comfort zone of working from home. And remember, no one actually wants to come to the office. It's just that office ends up being more productive. A lot of people struggle to work from home. So that's why it's more important for people to come out and go sit in an environment where they can be more productive. So I fully understand that. And I have days too where I want to sit in a meeting room and, you know, have my discussions there. However, I was already used to working from home. So I had a little home office. I had that self-discipline of being productive at home. So for me, it was not really difficult. But of course, you know, you need the whole team to see that.
Sure.
And I've always loved traveling. So for me, it was a huge downside that I'm stuck in one place and I have to be at a certain place every day at a certain time. And then I work late, so I would not go home before 9 p.m. That's the minimum I would wait. Our last office used to be in Aero City in Delhi, if anyone's aware. So that was not too bad. I actually enjoyed working from there. The office was beautiful. But once the pandemic happened, then of course we had to close. And we did reopen. And the unlock happened and no one ever came back to the office. So after a few months, we realized we're just wasting money and we closed the office.
And what was, so this question just came to my mind. So in terms of, you know, the design and everything, so what was your education background in? Do you study to become a designer, or it was again something you learned from, you know, the internet? So what was your education background?
It's the latter. I learned myself. Like I mentioned to you earlier, I was creative and I loved creating, and designing became something that I could bring my passion and some kind of a career into. And you know, they always say, I've always heard, do what you love or follow your passion. So for me, even though I was intrigued by technology as well, by engineering, and I always wanted to be an engineer, but then I realized that I was having more fun designing and being very technical with design as well. So that just naturally ended up complementing my way of thinking. So I was able to bring my technical mindset and my creative aspirations into a role. And then, of course, a lot of self-learning, then getting the right mentorship, getting exposed to the right kind of environment also made a huge difference and really helped me elevate my skills and my intellect about what I do.
So now looking like next couple of years, Keshav, like, what's the plan? Like, what do you want, like milestone, in terms of milestone, what milestones you're looking at? Both from like as a designer and as a racer.
Great question. It's so important to keep a track because time always flies. So in my design career, you know, being the first designer at Hike and then today being the head of design of Hike and all the other companies I worked with in between, I briefly worked with Oyo Rooms, I worked with Airtel, I've also worked with Niti Aayog, the government of India, and a bunch of other things. So I've gotten a lot of exposure and I've gotten to work on some very amazing projects with some very amazing people. And now I'm back at Hike. I've been there for 4 years now. And we recently pivoted to gaming and we've been doing online gaming, skilled gaming. And I'm really enjoying that because it's a new challenge. It's a new kind of customer base. And for my self-growth as well, being the head of design, there's a lot of mentorship you have to do. And now the designers I work with, they remind me of myself 10 years ago or 5 years ago. So it's actually become something I've started to enjoy a lot, the mentorship part of it. And because I've been there and I know what it does for you, I want to share the same with everyone. So there are still big milestones to achieve. We have very big ambitions as a company. We want to be one of the biggest players in the country. So I feel like achieving goals with the company is my goal. To have that one, you know, I've been in this space for so long and I've seen some big success, but I don't think I would say I've made it. And different people have different ways to measure that. You could say if you become a unicorn, then you feel like you made it, or you go public or something or the other. So some kind of an outcome with this company would be very fulfilling. And for when it comes to racing, now with remote working, I got back into racing because after the pandemic, everything stopped for me. And now lifestyle is such that I'm able to work very efficiently and I travel a lot. So I'm kind of working remotely a lot of the times. And that just allows me to stay creative and stay fresh. And for racing, I am aiming to go back properly and I've already started training and doing testing. And my goal is still to make it to Formula One one day. Now, what form I make it, I don't know yet. My desire is still to make it as a racing driver myself. But the least I expect it is to be just at least a development driver, understand the sport, be part of a racing team, understand the intricacies of Formula One, and just be part of that environment. It's something I've grown up thinking about. And I want to go and learn. I want to, you know, represent India in that sport. And then whatever I learn, I want to bring it back and hopefully one day start my own racing academy.
So Keshav, what is that step 1, 2, 3 you require to become that F1? Like, where are you? Like, how far or what is needed to become like F1 as part of F1?
So F1 has very strict guidelines on how you can reach F1. So you have to race in Formula 3, you have to race in Formula 2, and you have to win a certain amount of points, which is through your results. So how bad you finish in racing. If you're winning, you win those points really fast. If you're not winning, you're coming second, third, fourth. It takes a bit more time. Mm-hmm. And you get a 3-year window in which you have to earn a certain amount of points through a combination of Formula 3, Formula 4, Formula 2. So that's my intent as well, to go race Formula 3 and Formula 2 in the next couple of years and earn the points I need to get an F1 license. And hopefully in 3 years, make my way to F1. That's the milestone. So next year, I'm aiming to race in Formula 2 in some form or the other. And again, this is a self journey. So it's exciting for me as well, as I have not raced above that yet. I have driven a Formula 2 car, and as you can imagine, it's the fastest race car after a Formula 1. So I think there have only been a handful of drivers from India who have ever driven that car. So I feel very proud.
So what's the difference between, so there are different, may sound like very basic question, but so what's the difference between F2, F3 and F1? Is it the car speed difference, or there are certain, the track difficulties or something like that?
It's mainly a speed difference.
Okay.
Formula 3, Formula 2 and then Formula 1, they all follow the same principles of driving.
Okay.
And it's at a, so Formula 3 and Formula 2 become really high level, very high level. You have the best drivers in the world driving these cars, and the cars themselves are super technical. They are very heavy on the aerodynamics. So they're basically, you at this point, you're basically training for Formula One, and these cars are preparing you for that Formula One kind of driving.
What speed?
It's all about the cornering in race cars. So you can actually take a turn in a Formula 3 or Formula 2 car at over 250 kilometers per hour.
Okay.
That's taking a turn, not going straight.
Oh. Wow.
That's the power of aerodynamics.
Wow.
So that's what we are learning, essentially, how to drive these fast corners. Because only then the aerodynamics become so powerful that now you're driving and taking turns that you couldn't imagine was possible. And that's basically conditioning your mind to understand how to drive a Formula One car. So speed difference wise, you're basically going down 10-15% in speed from each car. And Formula 2 becomes very close to Formula 1. So if you can drive that car really well, then you will be fine in a Formula 1 car. And then when you get to Formula 1, again, it's all the technicalities. The car becomes really important in F1. So based on which team you are with, can have a huge impact on your career. But up to Formula 2, all the cars are the same. So it doesn't matter which team you're in, you will have the exact same car. And that's how they keep it fair.
So as you said, so in my latum, so basically the game is not to drive straight, obviously, but in terms of how well you can handle the corners and turn the car around. Cornering, as you're calling it, right?
Yes.
That's the most difficult aspect of the entire sport.
That's the magic. That's where you find the difference between a good driver and a champion. And the difference is very small.
Wow. But tell me, Keshav, isn't it like technology, right? So I have a technology background. So isn't like technology playing a big role helping drivers, say, you know, assisting? Is that sort of thing in place, or it's purely, you know, driver and the machine skills?
There's a lot of technology. And you will enjoy this because if you have this background, our race cars have hundreds of sensors in them.
Okay.
Everything from your brake pedal, your throttle pedal, your steering wheel, everything is being recorded real time.
Okay.
And so when we drive, the car is essentially recording your traces on how you drive. And when we come back and we've done a session, let's say a practice, we come back and they will print out the whole trace. It's literally like a chart. With multiple graphs on it, and they will overlay that with the fastest guy. They'll give you that access in up to Formula 2.
Wow.
And then you can actually see and compare yourself with the fastest person, and you will start seeing small differences. So this is the use of technology to become better. So one is, of course, you need to be fit. So that's your fitness. Then you have your mental strength, you know, meditation, yoga, all those things. So that's how you become a really good athlete, let's say. And then, of course, driving, you practice and you learn how to drive. But the final bit of percentages where you really are working towards winning, that's when technology really comes in. Because now you can have all this data that you can study and you can see clearly where you're losing time or gaining time. And I'm talking like very small amounts. So the difference between someone who's able to drive the race car really well and the difference, and from that to a person who actually can win, is so small. And like an example, let's say there's a turn we can take at 250 kilometers per hour.
Okay.
That's the limit of the car, after which it starts losing control. So a champion would be taking it like maybe 2-3 kilometers per hour faster, not more than that. So I might be a good driver, I'm doing it at 250, and the guy who's gonna be a champion because he's got that next level training and mindset and practice, he'll be doing it at 252-253. But now you compound that over 10-15 turns, and he would gain like 1/10 or 2/10 of a second on you. And that's the difference between being first or being 7th, 8th.
So the best correlation I can find, so I follow chess, right? So it's like, you know, for our listeners also, you know, Magnus Carlsen, number one, whenever top 5, top 10 players are playing, you know, it's just one mistake, you know, and the entire game changes. So sort of similar, you know, the level of accuracy is very high, or, you know, the delta between first, second, third becomes very small at top level, I think. Yeah. So that's really fascinating, you know. And so then how do you, Keshav, become, you know, how do you overcome that? Because that's so narrow, like so narrow. So fitness you mentioned. So let's talk about a little bit on fitness. What do you do, eat, you know? How do you get that extra? How do you get that edge in the game?
Absolutely. You're right. I mean, it becomes very difficult to get that last bit. First of all, of course, you have to be good at something. Like if you want to become a chef and you want to make desserts or bakery or, you know, any other cuisine, you need to have a natural instinct for it. You can still cook. You can cook food. But there's a point after which it becomes like very creative and attention to detail. And you have to have an instinct for it, an instinct for flavor. Instinct for even small things like how much salt to put. So same way in racing as well, there has to be natural instinct to be good at it. You can again go drive a car really fast and you can develop those skills, but if you don't have racing driver instincts, you will always struggle no matter how much money you put into it. And I see that too. A lot of kids have so much money, but they don't have the instinct. And then there are a lot of kids who have crazy instinct, but they don't know how to manage it. Either they are too aggressive, or they just don't have the resources or the fitness or something else. So in racing, one of the best things I love is it just teaches you to be good at everything. Because you're playing at a very high level now. And it's something I feel like, you know, growing up, the society doesn't teach us, like how to be a winner at a very high level. So, you know, growing up, education, everything, it teaches you how to function in this world, but it won't teach you how to be a winner. And that is something you have to learn separately. And racing is something where you really understand like how intense the world is and how much is possible in this world to achieve. And I would say a lot of my success in my design career has actually come from the fact that I was exposed to racing. And I learned the meaning of excelling in something. So you have to be good at everything. You have to be super fit. And I'm talking like very high level of fitness to just be able to drive the race car at full speed. So your cardio fitness, your muscle strength, your flexibility, that's the minimum you need to drive the car. Then on top of that, if you are mentally really strong, which again comes through meditation, yoga, mental exercises, then you have that advantage over there too. Because when you're racing, you're going really fast and you need to make a lot of decisions very fast. So you need to learn how to be calm, even under pressure. So it teaches you, it basically increases your tolerance for things in life. So for me, like in my daily life, I never get stressed because nothing can trigger my stress to a level where I'm actually racing. So it makes your life a lot better as well. So you have the fitness aspect, then you have the training. So of course, whatever driving you can do, we do a lot of simulated training now, just like pilots would do it, so that they can train like a plane, but without being on a plane, which is more expensive and dangerous. So same way, we do simulated training, which basically helps us build our race car, understand the racetrack, understand the cars. So when we arrive at the racetrack, we're already prepared for it. And our mind already has visualized the whole racetrack. So when I start driving, I'm not learning the track itself because I've already played it like hundreds of times on the simulator. And then you, of course, have all this technical training about understanding the mechanics of the car, the physics, the racetracks. So there's a lot happening. And only then you get to a point where you can start competing with the top drivers. And there is a point at which more practice will always help. It is a skill that you can develop. So of course, if you gave me the racetrack a few days before the race and I had the race car to practice, I would definitely have an advantage.
True.
But it levels out towards the end. Everyone's super fast, and then it just becomes all about your instinct to race. And that requires a very calm mind.
And I can sort of, is there an ideal weight for a racer? Because if the entire game is on aerodynamics, right, there has to be some ideal weight or something.
Weight is a factor for sure. The good thing is the teams always have some weight restrictions. So this way, for bigger drivers, there is always a minimum weight. So they would say, okay, the minimum weight is 70 kgs. So let's say I'm 63, 64.
Okay.
Most drivers are very light. So we are all very lean and very thin. So even if you're 65, you can't keep that extra 5 kgs. So they will have to put some extra weight in the car. Bring it up to 70 kgs.
Mm-hmm.
So this way it remains safe for everyone. So the minimum weight restrictions do apply. But yes, of course, if you are, let's say, overweight, then you will definitely struggle to even get in the race car because they are designed to be very small. So I see drivers who are like 6'1", 6'2", 6'4", as well.
Difficult
to
fit.
Super lean. Yeah, you have to be super lean to fit inside the car.
And I was reading this thing like after every race, the racer lose almost 8 pounds. Is it true?
Yes, absolutely. You lose a lot of weight. So when you start racing, you are so deep in adrenaline, you don't really notice how much you're sweating. And it gets really intense, like super intense. But you're in the zone because you're controlling a vehicle that you can't just stop when you want to. You're racing till the end. So let's say if a race is 45 minutes or max an hour, Formula One is generally the longer race. It's like almost 2 hours. The races I've done could be as much as 45 minutes, 1 hour max.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about duration. So in Formula One, they definitely lose 4 or 5 kgs. But as we reduce the duration to half, I would generally lose 2-3 kgs. But it is true. Like at the end of the race, you are 2-3 kgs lighter because you burned so many calories.
Oh, it's the best weight losing program. No, I mean, why don't they promote it? If it is the quickest result I've ever seen.
I know, it's crazy, right? Like in 1 hour, you lose 2-3 kgs.
Yeah, people struggle to lose that kind of weight in months, I've seen.
I've discovered once, I was racing in Qatar, which is actually where the F1 race is happening this weekend. I was racing there and it was an evening race. So, it looked very innocent. It was like, it's not that hot. It's nice weather, so should be fine. But I didn't account for the humidity. So we got in the race car and we did the first race. And I'm not kidding, man. After the race, I could barely get out of the car. I was gone.
Wow.
Like, adrenaline kept me going when I was racing. And the moment the race ended, my hands, legs, body just froze up. I couldn't like even turn the steering wheel anymore. And I came back to the pit lane. And I had to get out of the car, but I couldn't get out of the car. My muscles just wouldn't respond. I had completely burnt myself out. And I must have lost like 3 kgs or more in that 1 hour. So they had to literally pull me out of the car. And then I drank some water and some electrolytes. And that's when I felt like normal again. So it took me, after the race, it took me an hour to get back into like normal, you know, mind. Because I had a huge headache. I was feeling busy. I felt like high, to be honest. Like, you know, mixed something in my food or something and something is not right. Like, have I taken some really strong medicine?
Yeah.
So it took me an hour to like feel like sober and normal again because my head was spinning and I could barely understand what people were talking about. So that was my experience. And then I went on and trained a bit more and became even fitter. So that it didn't happen again. But I've seen guys like passing out in front of me.
Wow.
You know, just that dehydration.
Quite taxing on your body and mind. Wow. I mean, I have... So from, you know, from spectator perspective, so I've only seen once, and I somewhere in Europe, I don't know where it was, long time back, race car. And I was wondering, because I was a kid that time, maybe, you know, so I was wondering, the car came and it just went. It's like, what are people enjoying? I cannot even see the car, you know, because it was too fast for me. And I'd sort of, it took me by a surprise. I was a kid or something, and I fell like 2-3 steps. You know, it was too fast. So from perspective of yours and everything, how is supposed to someone, you know, who is there on the ground, supposed to enjoy or something? I don't know if it makes sense or not. But from me as a kid, I remember this particular scenario. I just fell and I was like, wow, that was just too fast.
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, honestly, like, it's more fun to watch on the TV.
Yeah.
Because it's designed for the TV. So, you have all these camera angles, the commentary. So, you're always seeing the best stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You get used to that. You get used to watching a race car coming a certain way, looking on the screen. So, when you go to the race, you're sitting in one place. Now, you don't have the access to all of the camera angles. So, it's just a different kind of enjoyment. Then it becomes more about the environment, the atmosphere, the energy, the sounds. It becomes more about that, not more about the racing itself. Like, I've been to a bunch of races and I actually sometimes got really bored and I was like, oh my god, it's so much better on TV. And then I realized that everyone thinks it's better on TV. I'm not the only one. But when you go there, it's more about, like, you know, it's like watching your favorite artist on the stage, even if that person is like right across the stadium and you can barely see them, but you can feel their energy, you can hear them sing live. So it's something like that. So even if you're not very close to the race car, it's about feeling that energy in the environment and seeing them in person, seeing your, you know, your idols in person, and just having that kind of festival feeling. And I've seen this in Europe a lot. Like, the whole families come, they all camp, they're there for 3-4 days. It's like a festival for them.
Yes.
And I guess it's more about that, like just living that passionate life about cars and speed and racing. And it just becomes like a nice festival where you can go and enjoy. So watching the race itself is the least fun part. Everything before and after is why you're there. You're there for the music, you're there for the food, you're around like-minded people. And you know, you can just hear all these race cars, you can see so many cars. So it's more about that, those things. And then, yes, of course, the race happens for an hour or two.
Yeah.
You watch it, and if you're lucky, you might get treated to a really good race and maybe your favorite driver would win. So there is thrill there. But purely from viewing it, it's actually more fun on TV.
Yeah. that's awesome, awesome. Thanks a ton, Keshav, for your time and being so candid, you know, and sharing your experience. And, you know, we wish you really all the best for your upcoming races. And, you know, it's such an important aspect. I mean, the way you described, you know, how it makes you ready for other aspects in your life, like any other sports also. But in terms of, you know, how it can help you as an entrepreneur or someone else, you know, to tackle things outside race, because it prepares you, and how difficult it is, you know, sharing those insights. So thanks a ton, Keshav, for your time, and anything you want to share from your side.
I really appreciate, and I'm so happy I got to share some stuff about my racing and my journey. So thanks for giving me that opportunity. And see, the biggest thing that I have gained and learned from racing is self-discipline and the understanding that anything is possible. We just need to push ourselves. So I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who have passions and hobbies that they want to pursue, but, you know, life is designed in a way where you really can't. So, like I said, you know, I'm completely self-made, self-taught. And the biggest thing I've always focused on, which I learned from racing and work, is an outcome mindset. I work backwards of the outcome. And somehow things have aligned, because I was so driven to go racing that I ended up building a full career in,
in product design. So I really hope this inspires people to go explore their passions. Maybe someone really loves to play the cricket, or someone wants to learn the guitar. Like, just start somewhere and just fulfill those, that calling that you have inside you, some kind of passion that's calling you, but you're not able to respond to it. Because if you respond to that, everything else becomes so much better in your life, because now you're really fulfilling your existence. So for me, racing has always been about living life beyond what is around me. And it's allowed me to lift myself up and do things that I couldn't even imagine. So I really hope, you know, this helps people have some perspective or some, you know, reference in their life that they can use to move forward. And once again, great speaking with you. Had a lot of fun.
Thanks a ton, Keshav. It was very inspiring, and we wish you all the best.